Word on the street is we're supposed to love our neighbors as ourselves, but is that really the case if your neighbors are the local meth dealers? Let's find out. Welcome back to Deep in Bear Country, a Berenstain Bearcast. I am your host, Phil Gonzalez, and this week we are going to answer the perennial question of how much neighborliness do you owe the local meth dealers who tried to kill your children a few years back? Who among us cannot bring ourselves to love the family of drug dealers who move in next door? Who among us would have a problem opening your hearts to the people who were arrested not terribly long ago for supplying drugs to the local gang of juvenile delinquents who then spread those drugs throughout your elementary school? I mean, that's a good question. And can we do it? And can we tap into the quote from Luke that says, love your neighbor as yourself? But who is my neighbor? Obviously, it's the local drug dealers. This week's book is, of course, The Berenstain Bears Love Their Neighbors. It's a sequel of sorts to last week's book, The Berenstain Bears New Neighbors, in that it does bring back those new neighbors. Only briefly, only for a panel, but it does acknowledge the fact that the Berenstain Bears have neighbors. The Bear family has neighbors. The Bear family has new neighbors. And the Bear family has a new geography. There's a lot to go into here. This is a 2009 book, so we're going back a few years in our continuity. So Honey Bear is here. She's not quite the toddling mastermind that we've met in recent books. She's still fairly confined to the ground level of below the knees. She's capable of being trod upon, I guess is what I'm trying to say here. She's not an intelligent toddling toddler. So we got that. We haven't been introduced to a lot of the characters in the later religious books that we've been introduced to. And also, things are kind of messed up as far as the Bear Country map is concerned. So let's take a look at this book. On the cover, we see Papa Bear shaking hands with some sort of a hillbilly. Is that appropriate? Can I say that? Can I say hillbilly? Is that okay? Some sort of Appalachian resident, some sort of Little Abner-esque, Snuffy Smith adjacent, filthy bear, a dirty boy, a muddy man, a beoveralled, flop-hatted, bepatched, barefoot. I guess saying barefoot, it isn't fair. Snaggle-toothed bear of sorts, I guess, is how we're looking at this. If you look at the cover and you've had any experience with the Berenstain Bears beyond the average, if you've, say, read the chapter books or watched the cartoon, I think they might be in the cartoon. They've popped up here and there. You will recognize that these are the Bog Brothers from Forbidden Bog, people who we've had encounters with in the past. It's weird to see Papa shaking hands with them as, well, we'll remind you all about their nefarious past. But this is the Berenstain Bears Love Their Neighbors, a Living Lights book, a Living Lights faith story. So there's probably going to be a lot of Bible quotes, a lot of callbacks to the Bible. We're probably going to see a lot of references to biblical tales that we haven't talked about in a while. So I'm looking forward to it, popping out my Bible knowledge. For those of you who are new here, not a religious man. Not a Bible believer, not a believer in anything except myself. I do believe I am the greatest boy. That's a lie. I don't. I have zero self-esteem. My self-esteem is in the toilet. I've done one-man shows about this. And I'll have a one-man show coming up this summer. If you're in town in August at the Minnesota Fringe Festival, I will be doing a one-man show. Putting that out there. Don't have a title for it yet. Don't have a theme for it yet. Probably won't be about the Berenstain Bears. But if you're in town and you want to see me live on stage, book the first week in August and get to the Twin Cities, I guess. In any case, the Berenstain Bears love their neighbors. Let's take a look at what this book is about, shall we? Love your neighbor as yourself. And who is my neighbor? Apparently, it's a drug dealer. Let's talk about this. Let's talk about this because some of you are probably confused as to what I mean by apparently it's a drug dealer. So in the Berenstain Bears and the drug-free zone, Bear Country School was beset by drugs. Drugs were everywhere. There were a problem. Students were taking drugs. Kids were taking drugs. Someone was dealing drugs. There was this whole plot about a mysterious bear who showed up in town. Brother and sister and cousin Fred got the bear detectives back together with our dog Snuff to try to sniff out who the drug supplier was in the area. And they zeroed in on this mysterious trench-coated bear who had taken a room at Ms. McGriz's like boarding house. Turns out he was an undercover cop. It had nothing to do with the actual drug. Turns out, and then they thought it was maybe Raffish Ralph ripoff. Turns out it wasn't Raffish Ralph. He was working with the cops for the first time, probably to get a lighter sentencing on something. Then they finally found out that it was actually the Bog Brothers who live in Forbidden Bog. And who are the Bog Brothers? Why, they are a group of undereducated, low-income dwellers? I don't know what you would call swamp people. I don't know what's the appropriate term for swamp dwellers who are violent drug dealers who sell drugs to children. I don't know. Undesirable residents of Bear Country. Forbidden Bog is far away. It's on the edge of Bear Town. It's beyond the wood. You have to go through the woods, traipse through the woods, step over alligators and logs. It's difficult to get there. And if you do, you most likely will be shot by a Bog Brother. We've established in the past the Bog Brothers shoot first and ask questions later. They're very violent. They are very much to themselves. And as we see here, they all arrive handcuffed together. It's the Bog Brothers, the ones who lived in Forbidden Bog. They scowled at Chief Bruno and were quite a sight in their ragged, dirty clothes. "Well, well, if it isn't Bear Country's rottenest citizens," that's Police Chief Bruno. "It was bad enough that you were shooting crocodiles and bald eagles. They are in danger, you know." So right off the bat, we're reminded that they kill not just anyone who enters their area. They kill endangered species. They, like, blatantly kill bald eagles. They kill bald eagles. "Varmints is varmints," one of the brothers muttered and spat tobacco juice. Okay, they also spit constantly. They spit tobacco juice constantly. "And it was bad enough that you were polluting our river, but now you've gone too far with drug dealing. You've tried to pollute the minds and bodies of Bear Country's most precious possession, our cubs, and turn them into an endangered species." A little hyperbole on Chief Bruno's part, but they are selling drugs to elementary school students. Or I guess in the chapter books, they were more like junior high school age students. It's kept a little more vague. There's a lot of romance in the chapter books, a lot of stuff that you would most likely see from like 7th and 8th graders. But book them, Officer Marguerite, and lock them up. And they do get locked up, in case you were worried. Officer Marguerite hauls them off to be fingerprinted and shut into the slammer. Come to find out, it was, of course, not Raffish Ralph. It was these dirty boys, these raggedy men who did it. So we've established. But also, like, the chapter books are set in a different continuity, so let's keep that in mind as well. Different continuity. But I do want to say that even though the chapter books are set in a different continuity, for those of you who are new to the show, there's several different continuities in the Berenstain Bears world. There's the continuity A, which is our first time books, like go to the dentist, visit the doctor, first day of school. Those books, I'm getting all the titles wrong. On purpose, perhaps. Then there's like the original line of I Can Read It All by Myself books. They're kind of in their own continuity, more slapstick, cartoony world. You got the big chapter books. You've got the Berenstain Bears Scouts chapter books. You've got the religious books. You've got the new religious books. You've got books where certain characters appear and certain characters never appear. It's all different continuities, different tones, different points of view, different objectives. Like the chapter books were all about just being entertaining. Oh yeah, and then there's the ABC cartoon, and then there's the Nelvana cartoon. Different continuities, different character designs, different intentions. But at the bottom of it all is the Berenstain Bears, who are all about community and neighborliness. So while the Bog Brothers might not be the neighbor drug dealers in this book, they are definitely still the Bog Brothers, who've only been established as antagonistic towards our main characters and who definitely live far out in Forbidden Bog. So let's see how much of that is kept in this book, The Berenstain Bears Love Their Neighbors, by Jan and Mike Berenstain. So, all right, let's take a look. So first of all, we've got this beautiful two-page spread. It's our title page, Berenstain Bears Love Their Neighbors. Title page, we got the Zondervan logo, got the Zonder Kids logo. And it has this nice overview, the sort of a drone's eye view of Bear Town or Bear Country, the Bear Country. Outside of Bear Town, we've just got the sort of residential area. Now, you might notice that it's wrong. It's absolutely incorrect. This is not the geography of Bear anything that we've ever seen that's sort of compressed. Maybe it's supposed to be impressionistic, like this is going to give you an idea of who our neighbors are in Bear Town, but this is not the way these houses are arranged at all. We have the treehouse in the upper left with Papa mowing the lawn, Mama sweeping the stoop, Sister painting a banister, Brother washing the windows, and Honey Bear playing on the ground. But right across the street from them, and across the street, a little catty corner, a little kitty corner, a little cater corner, a little diagonal, we've got the pandas. We got the panda family, Peter Panda et al., in their octagonal house, not directly across the street as they were portrayed in the previous book that we read. Behind the Bear Country, the Bear family treehouse, we've got Farmer Ben and Mrs. Ben standing at their barn, which is unusual because usually it's Farmer Ben's field that's adjacent to the Bear family house. And it's usually not where it's portrayed here, but we'll get back to that. Just beyond the panda's house, we see a mansion, which is unusual, and standing in front of that, we see Squire and Lady Grizzly. Squire Grizzly with his monocle and riding crop. We see a beautiful fountain. We see a gate leading to the house. Not a complete gate. The gate doesn't go all around the house. That wouldn't make any sense the way they've portrayed it here, but we definitely see the Squire Grizzly mansion. Squire Grizzly being the richest bear in Bear Country. He's like a literal billionaire. Just like a few yards from the Bear family house. And then at the top of the image, we see another mansion with a horseshoe door knocker, a bunch of flamingos out front, and a limousine. We know from experience this is Mayor Horace J. Honeypot's house, where he lives with his wife, Mrs. Honeypot. Squire Grizzly and Horace J. Honeypot, extremely corrupt. Squire Grizzly pays off the mayor. This is not me making this up. This is established canon. Squire Grizzly frequently pays off the mayor to get his way in town to establish things he wants established. Squire Grizzly, also Papa Bear's biggest client. He has Papa Bear frequently make reproductions of antiques that he can put in his mansion so that he can store the actual antiques in his basement where he keeps all of his priceless treasures. So he has Papa do reproductions that people can actually sit on. Squire Grizzly, incredibly corrupt. He is a billionaire. Of course, he's incredibly corrupt. None of these people, Squire Grizzly, Mayor Horace J. Honeypot, neither of them live anywhere near the bears. They live on the other side of Bear Town. They live in a rich part of Bear Town. They have to drive miles to get to where the Bear family lives. Bear family, usually surrounded by the Bruins, the Lizzie Bruin and her family, are usually across the street. Like, actually, you see sort of a blank area here just below the title, and that's usually where the Bruins' house is shown as existing, so I don't know where that is. But right down in the bottom left corner of this beautiful spread is a lean-to, a shack, a broken-down shack with a collapsing roof. We see the Bog brothers outside. One of them's asleep next to a dog leaning on a stump. One of them's slopping the hogs. And one of them has a pitchfork. I don't know where he's going with the pitchfork. There's no hay. But there's also trash all in the yard. And it is located where Farmer Ben's farm, like his crops, are usually portrayed. Not quite as close as they're seen. Like, this isn't even a road going by the bear's house. It's just like a sidewalk. As I said, the geography seems to have been compressed, but usually that's where Farmer Ben's field is. As we've seen, like, it's like where his pumpkin patch usually is, his corn in other seasons. So we've shuffled things around. This is not the bear country we're used to. But where is it going? Where are we going from here? Well, let's see. So it's an average morning. The Bear family is doing the chores that we said. This is unusual because we usually don't see the title page actually be representative of the story itself, but we see the bears doing their daily chores in the title page spread, and then we cut to the beginning of the story, and they are doing those chores, except that I believe in the title page, Honey Bear is playing in the paint, and in the actual first page of the story, she's just picking flowers. She's actually weeding the garden. So Papa's using a push mower. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, I do use a push mower. It came with the house. Our lawn is very sparse, and the grass is thin, and it's not much trouble to push a push mower through Minnesota grass, at least where I live. It's not healthy grass. We've got a lot of creeping Charlie. We got a lot of beautiful soft clover. So we don't care too much about grass. This isn't Texas where I grew up, where like your lawn is the most important thing in the world. So yes, the, I mean, and push mowers are easy. You push them, you just shove them. They're not too heavy, and you just got to oil them and sharpen the blades once a year. There's no gas involved. There's no motor involved for maintenance. You just gotta keep them up. You can keep them up yourself. I think I know how to do that now. So yeah. So to answer some questions from my last video, yes, I use a push mower because even though it is 2025, it's just easy. It's just easy and it stores easy, and like I said, it came with the house. So the bears love their neighbors. We're establishing that, and now we're focusing on the four groups of neighbors. We got the pandas, we got the squires, we've got the farmers, and we've got the Horaces. So we have the mayor, fire, squire Grizzly and lady Grizzly, farmer Ben and Mrs. Ben, and they're all good neighbors. The pandas are neater than the bears. They like to, we see their spite fence. We see their octagon house. We see Peter Panda raking up some leaves. We see his sisters helping him bag the leaves. We see the father wheelbarrowing away. That's a lot of people, by the way, taking care of just the leaves. We see the mama, just like mama, sweeping the stoop. I guess it's a thing you just got to do. Takes as much time and effort as mowing the lawn and raking the leaves, I guess. We see farmer Mrs. Ben posing for us a la American Pastoral, even though, as we know, in American Pastoral, it's a picture of a farmer and his daughter, not a farmer and his wife. Keep that in mind. That's supposed to be his sallow-faced daughter, but they're posing like American Pastoral, but they look happy. Even his chicken coop, neat as a pin, a place for everything and everything in its place. No, that's not even Farmer Ben. How do I do Farmer Ben's voice? No, that's not Farmer Ben's voice. How do we do Farmer Ben's voice? A place for everything and everything in its place. That's my motto, says Farmer Ben. Yeah, it's a place for everything, a place for everything, and everything in its place. That's my motto, says Farmer Ben. Then we got, of course, the man. It says the Bear family had a few neighbors whose houses were fancy. Again, Horace J. Honeypot and his limo, nowhere near the Bear family. And certainly Squire Grizzly, the local millionaire and the millionaire's wife, who did not used to be a millionaire. I can't remember what book it was. Maybe the Wax Museum. She used to be a proprietor of something. She married into the money. So Lady Grizzly is a little more down to earth. But no matter what, you marry a billionaire, you're no longer down to earth. But the Bear family's proud of their neighborhood, and they get along well with all their neighbors, except one group. Well, kind of one group. It says except for the Bog brothers. But as we learn, the Bear family doesn't have any dealings with the Bog brothers. They live in a rundown old shack just across the walkway from the Bear family treehouse. There's junk everywhere, chickens, dogs, and cats everywhere, a big pig wallowing in the mud. We see them shoveling slop. Into the pig pen, but it's like, it looks like broccoli, cherry tomatoes, banana peel, it's like a mushroom, an apple core. Like, the Bog brothers, say what you will about the Bog brothers, they're eating fairly healthy. This is healthy food. I mean, they got cans out front, but those could just be cans of beans. We don't know. The Bog brothers, Mama would say whenever she saw them, they're a disgrace to the neighborhood. Yes, agreed Papa, they certainly are a problem. So we don't know when the Bog brothers moved in. Again, this is nowhere near Forbidden Bog. We see that they are located near some trees, but this is all. They're also located near some just fields. So I don't know when they moved out of Forbidden Bog, although their shack does seem to be the same shack that they lived in Forbidden Bog. So no telling if they were supposed to have moved in recently, I assume, because we haven't heard of them, even in the religious line. We've never heard of the Bog brothers just living just catty corner or across the street from the Bear family. So this is new. This is a new setup. Keep in mind, also, these are the local meth dealers. We never get told it's meth, but, I mean, they're the local meth dealers. They're the local meth, or whatever the Bear equivalent is. Grizz amphetamines. I don't know. Crystal Grizz. They also hate the fact, the Bear family hates the fact, that they drive around in a broken down jalopy with their top down. Makes a huge racket. They play their banjo while they drive and they spit. Now we see one of the bears spitting out of the car, almost hits the bear's mailbox. It's brown spit. So even though it doesn't say it's tobacco, it's definitely tobacco. It's either tobacco or he's got like a major sinus infection going on. Just something horrible if his mucus is brown. That is something you need to look in on. Like, check in on. Like, I know you probably don't believe in doctors. Snuffy Smith goes to the doctor. He's not a good doctor, but he does go to the doctor. I think Lil Abner probably had, like, a medicine man. Not a medicine man, but, like, a Oh, your local doc? Yeah, you would go to your doc. Like, there was somebody who would give you, go to whoever you go to, Bog Brother, and get your brown mucus checked out, or stop chewing tobacco. Either way, you're not doing well. Really, said Mama. Those Bog Brothers are a disgrace.
I agree. I'm afraid they're not very good neighbors.
Now, I would also agree, because even though the Bog Brothers haven't really done anything directly to the Bear family, they do drive around in a noisy vehicle, blasting their banjo music. They have an open pig pen right out in the house. And as we know from anyone who lives near pigs, they smell very bad. They wallow around in filth and pig slop. They are disgusting. Not the pigs themselves, but a pig pen is pretty gross, smells very bad. There's a lot of runoff of fecal matter from the pig pen, like into the local ground. Like, you don't want them near people's houses. It certainly can't be good for, like, the farm, which is right across the street. Looks like they have stray dogs. Looks like they have stray dogs running around, stray cats running around. Their chickens are just kind of everywhere, pecking and pooping. They're not good neighbors. Also, their house is falling down, and I'm not a person who, like, cares much about property values, but the house looks terrible. Also, it seems to have some sort of wood-burning stove that's just, like, crammed in there. The windows are broken. They can't, their quality of life is low, and it seems to be, like, it's affecting the neighborhood. So there's this, running through all of this is the notion that the Bog Brothers aren't the best neighbors. But Papa gets in the mail an announcement that there's a Big Bear Town Festival, big poster size, like a poster size invitation to the Big Bear Town Festival. Help celebrate our wonderful neighborhood, games, rides, contests, prizes, fireworks, 9 a.m. to 9 a.m. on Saturday. Invited directly by Horace J. Honeypot, the mayor. And the kids are excited. Everyone wants to go to this Big Bear Town Festival. Sounds like fun. We ought to go. So that Saturday, they pile into their car, the Red Roadster, with a picnic lunch, folding chairs, looking forward to a day of fun and excitement. But as they drove along, the car starts making a sound. Here we go. I'm going to get onomatopoeic all over you. I'm going to whip out some onomatopoeias, and we're going to see how these onomatopoeias translate into the real world. The car starts going puckada, 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 but it soon developed into a puckada whee, puckada whee. Uh-oh. Puckada, puckada, puckada whee, puckada whee. And the next thing you know, it's 1925, and the radiator cap blows off. The radiator cap blows off. Papa Bear, that's what you get for driving a car that you have to pour water into. Do you crank it up to start it? I don't know, but pocket-a, 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 clunk. There goes the radiator explodes. Papa pops the hood, starts fanning out the steam, this cloud of steam. And he's like, oh, I guess it overheated. Well, I guess. It is literally, what, like 50 yards from your front door and it's overheated? Stop driving a 100-year-old car, Papa, please. Please. Well, how are we going to get to the Bear Town Festival? That's what Sister says. Sister, I hate to tell you, hate to remind you, you live within shouting distance of everyone in Bear Town. Bear Town has always historically been somewhat within walking distance of the Bear family. You could walk at this point. Since we've seemed to have compressed the geography of your world down, you could walk to the Bear Town Festival, but they're not going to. Papa says, maybe somebody will stop and give us a hand. Look, here comes a car. Let's all wave. Maybe they'll stop. And a car is pulling up. It is a purple limousine. Oh, sorry. A long lavender limousine. And it's Mayor Horace J. Honeypot and his wife. Mayor and Mrs. Honeypot. But Mayor Honeypot leans out of a car. And I want to point out that Mayor Horace J. Honeypot, traditionally, in the original cartoon he was in and in the chapter books, is portrayed as not malapropisms. What do you call it when you screw up the syntax, you flip around letters and words when you're talking about them? Maybe it is. It's not malapropisms. I can't remember what it's called. In any case, he swaps the first letters of words around, and the first syllables of words around. It's a speech thing. He's got some sort of speech impediment. It's hilarious, but it doesn't work in print. It works in the cartoon just fine. It's like a little, like, just give him a little bit of a character. But in print, it's annoying to read because you've got to kind of just like stumble through his like mistakes, but it doesn't translate to the page well, to the written word, to prose. So I'm glad that they've opted to not keep that quality of his speech in this book, because he stops and he says, "Ah, sorry, we can't stop. We're late already. I'm master of ceremonies today. I've got to be there on time. I'm sure someone will stop to help you." And he squeals away in a squeal of tires. How on a dirt road, I don't know. There's a squeal of tires on a dirt road. But in any case, Papa's like, oh, well, I guess someone else will come along. And another car does come along. It's Squire Grizzly's big black Grizz Royce. A Grizz Royce, you say? Well, what's a Grizz Royce? Well, I'll tell you. A Grizz Royce is the bear world equivalent of Rolls Royce, which means that there was not a Charles Rolls and Henry Royce in Bear World. There was a Charles Grizz, I assume, and a Henry Royce, or a Barry Royce, or whatever you want to call him, in this world. Rolls Royce comes from Manchester. It was a British luxury car established in 1904. Started off, it built a reputation building cranes. And then it moved into luxury cars and finally aero engines. Rolls Royce. So they chose, Mike or Jan chose to make the joke about Grizz Royce. I guess that's fine. I assume it's still a luxury vehicle. I wonder if they built cranes. I wonder if they build aeroplane engines. Who knows? We don't get that answer. What we do get is Lady Grizzly rolling down the window and going, "I'm afraid we can't stop. We don't have the time. I'm the judge of the flower arranging contest. We simply must hurry." And they pull away. You see where this is leading, right? So the bear family is stuck. They don't have anyone to help them get to the thing, but they do see a car coming up the road. Uh-oh. It's a big dusty cloud. Who is it? It's the Bog Brothers, riding up in their clanking, rickety old jalopy, screeching to a halt. One of them's playing the banjo, one of them's stroking a pig, one of them's behind the wheel, and Mike or Jan, whoever drew this picture, has illustrated them with the most malevolent faces in Beartown. We are meant to believe that bad news is a-coming, but if you have a modicum of intelligence, you can probably figure out where this story is going. The local drug dealers arrive in their broken-down car. "Howdy," says the first Bog Brother.
"Hello there," says Papa.
"I'm Lem," says the first Bog Brother. "I can see you're having some trouble with your vehicle."
And vehicle is written with a hyphen.
"With your vehicle."
Yes, we are," said Papa.
"Well, maybe we can give you a hand," said Lem.
"Well, that would be very neighborly of you," said Papa.
"Hey, Clem! Hey, Shim! Get out the rope!"
Which is a threatening thing to say. I'm sorry. If you have if you are dressed like a refugee from Hooterville and you scream, "Get the rope," to your malevolent-looking brother, I would not try. That's the point where I would simply start running. Next thing you know, they're going to be pulling out one of those blunderbusses, like one of those rifles with like the trumpety. Like they're going to pull out one of those. And then where are you going to be? What's going to happen to you then? But the Bog Brothers pull out a rope and they tie the roadster to the back of their car and start pulling it. Now they think, the Bear family thinks, the Bog Brothers are going to be pulling them to their house and they're worried. But it's not. They're worried because they don't want to meet that big pig. What it says is brother and sister hoped the Bog Brothers weren't taking them down to their old shack. They didn't want to meet that big pig. Which is funny because as we've seen multiple times in this book, they live within walking distance. They live across a dirt path from this house. If they take you to their old shack, you're not stuck there. You can go home. It's right. You can see it from their house. Your home is right there. It's easy. It's not complicated, Bear family. But they don't. They don't take the Bear family to their house. They take them to a rundown old filling station. And someone who looked like an older version of the Bog Brothers comes out. And I want to say that anyone in Bear Town, anyone in Bear Country, anyone in Bear World who is older than another person looks like an older version of that person. Because all the bears kind of look the same. The Bog Brothers do have fewer teeth than most of our friends in Bear World. That's fine. And this guy doesn't actually look like any other bear in Berenstain Bear World. And I'll tell you why. It's because this old bear in filthy overalls, in a faded yellow shirt, with ratty cuffs, a handkerchief sticking out of his back, and an honest-to-God trucker cap on, standing by old-fashioned gasoline tanks in front of a shack that says Zeke's and a clock that indicates that it is 11 o'clock, so they are late to the jamboree downtown. This bear is one of the few bears we get to see ever illustrated who has facial hair. Yes, I know that Mr. What was his name? The art teacher from that one. What is his name? The art teacher from the one book who's got a, he's got a wax mustache. His name was like Mr. Pens or Mr. Easel or Mr. Sketchpad. I don't remember. He was the art teacher. He had a wax mustache. We know that the bear's uncle has a wax mustache, but we've never seen this. This bear has an honest to goodness beard, like a, but not just any beard, like an Iron and Wine beard from like the early 2000s. Like he's got a hipster beard, except he's not a hipster. He's legit grown out this beard. I just want to point it out because this beard is awesome. It is unlike anything we've seen in Bear World up to this point. We are hitherto inexperienced in bear. I'm gonna if you're watching along at home, I want you to admire this bear's beard. It's a thing of beauty. If I were to get a tattoo at this point, I would get Zeke tattooed on me, even though I guarantee you that he has traded in that red trucker cap for a very different yet shockingly similar red ball cap. I guarantee you that's what Zeke is wearing. But we find out that Zeke is Lem's uncle.
Hello, Uncle Zeke.
Well, hello, nephew, says Uncle Zeke. What can I do you for?
Well, these poor folks broke down on the road. You reckon you can fix them up?
Well, let's take a look, said Uncle Zeke.
He bangs around under the hood. He finds a busted hose.
It's a radiator hose. Busted clean open. I should have another one of them around here somewheres.
And he rummages through a bunch of his trash in the back, finds a hose, connects it up, polishes it up.
Good as new. We'll top off the radiator and you folks can be on your way.
Now, I think the Bear family's very lucky that this fly-blown Appalachian, probably believer in some sort of mountain god, worships the ice monster from on top of Mount Grizzly, was there. Because I wonder if anyone else in Bear World knows how to fix a 100-year-old car engine.
Well, thank you very much.
He shakes hands with Zeke, and Mamas and Papa are like, how much do we owe you? And Lem says, nothing. This one's on us. After all, we're neighbors.
Well, that's right, says Mama. And then Mama does something that we don't expect of her. Well, we maybe expect of her, but the other bears didn't expect of her. She invites them to their house for dinner the next week, and then invites them all to the big Bear Town Festival. And Lem is super excited. He's like, he would love to come to dinner at their house because Shem's cooking has been getting a bit tiresome. Too much possum stew.
Then they get invited to the big Bear Town Festival, and Lem says,
we ain't been to a big shindig since Grandpap's 90th birthday party.
So the Bear family drives into Bear Town with the Bog Brothers and their Uncle Zeke. They get to the big Bear Town Festival, and oh boy, we get a two-page spread with the festival. We've got one of those, what's it, like in Tomorrow World, in Disney World, they got like it's kind of like the Dumbo ride, but it's like little spaceships that go around. We got one of those. We got a Ferris wheel. We've got tents. We've got a shoot all these ducks game. Not real ducks, but fake ducks. We got fireworks going off. We've got a big moon rocket test your strength machine. And up on stage, we've got the big Bear Town Festival band. Why, who is it? Who should it be? It's some sort of Beatles tribute band called the Beartles. And like the Beatles, the band consists of three members. One of them on drums, one of them on electric guitar, and one of them on slap bass. Your famous Beatles lineup, drums, guitar, slap. It's more like, it'd make more sense if it was like a Violent Femmes cover band, but this is a Beatles cover band, I guess. What's funny is you could have a Beatles cover band in our world called the Beartles. You could dress up in bear costumes and play Beatles songs with the lyrics changed to be more like bears. Like, I Want to Hold Your Paw, or Ticket to Bear, or Norwegian Bear, or Bear on the Hill, or Mean Mr. Grizzly, or Being for the Benefit of Mr. Bear, or Max Bear's Silver Hammer, or Sergeant Bear's Lonely Bear Club Band, or Bearjical Bearstery Bear, or All You Need Is Bear. I don't know. In any case, that's the Beardles for you. We got it. But they hadn't missed much. They just missed Mayor Honeypot's home welcoming speech, which is fine. When it was time for the fireworks, the Bog Brothers livened things up. The Bog Brothers suddenly whip out musical instruments. They got their banjo. They got a washtub bass. They got a fiddle. They start playing. And I want to say, Bog Brothers, I'm so happy that you're so excited to be here. I'm so happy that you brought your music. I'm so happy you're sharing your art with us. But there's a band playing like 30 feet from you. They are playing music. And then you started playing music. And that seems a little aggressive on your part. I get it. But also probably should have stepped back a little bit and like just let the band, because they're currently playing I Want a Bear Your Bear, Fool on the Bear, Bear on the Hill, Across the Bearniverse. So maybe chill out before you whip into your Buster Scruggs, or I don't know what you're playing. But they do start playing. The pig's happy. Everyone's happy. And then the next week, the Bog Brothers come over to the Bear family treehouse for dinner. They bring possum stew, and it was delicious. And I want to point out how distressing it is whenever the bears eat a mammal, because we know that mammals, that they are mammals. Like, unlike our world, most mammals in bear world used to be able to speak. We see skunks and rabbits, and I know that possum is, I think, a marsupial, so it's a little different, but that possum, you probably have carried on conversations with possums in the past. We've seen possums in these books, so weird that you killed and ate them, I guess. We know you eat animals. You are not, you know, herbivorous, but you are, they are, those were friends of yours at one point. So I know the world has moved on, and that those possums are now the clearing at the end of the path, but you know, it seems a little disrespectful. That's all I'm saying. A little disrespectful. But that's not the end of the book. First of all, okay, let's talk about this book. And to talk about this book, we've got a special treat, something we haven't dealt with in a while. So I wanna make sure that we, ladies and gentlemen, we have activities and questions from brother and sister. So if you are not familiar with the Living Lights books, most of them have a series of discussion questions and activities at the end to do and talk about, usually divided into two parts, things to talk about, things to do. We haven't seen this in a while. Sometimes the ebooks don't have them. They're left out. So I'm very pleased this one does have them. But let's talk about it. Let's answer some questions from the back of the book. How does the Bear family feel about the Bog Brothers? Do you think they are easy to like? I think we're pretty clear on what the Bear family feels about the Bog Brothers. They're bad neighbors. They don't keep their yard clean. They seem pretty disrespectful noise-wise and spitting things out of their mouth-wise. I don't think the Bog Brothers are easy to like. I don't think they make themselves... Granted, it takes two to tango, but they don't make themselves very approachable. They are notorious for killing things, killing people who go on their land. They are notorious for selling drugs to children. No, they're not easy to like. I don't think the Bog Brothers are easy to like. I don't think the Bog Brothers make themselves approachable. That's just me. That's just me. What are your thoughts? Question two. How did the Bear family show their love for their neighbors? Now, are we talking before or after the incident with the Bog Brothers? Before, they don't really give us any indication of that. I mean, obviously, we know that neighborliness and community are super important to the Bear family, super important to the Berenstain, super important to Mike. We have books and books and books all about that subject. But how, in this specific book, we don't know how they do it. They keep their yard clean. They seem to feel that keeping your yard clean is a very, and it is kind of a neighborly thing, like just sort of keeping your community beautiful. Seems to be that, but we don't see them actually interacting with any of their other neighbors in this book, except in a negative way. We see Squire and Mrs. Grizzly and Horace J. Honeypot and his wife blow them off and not offer them help. I don't know why the pandas weren't driving by. I don't know why if the pandas aren't going, maybe the pandas don't feel welcome at the big jamboree. We don't see them there. I don't know, but the pandas don't offer them help. Farmer and Mrs. Ben don't pass by in their car and offer them help or on their horse or whatever. So we don't know. We don't know how they show their love for their neighbors. Later on, once they befriend the Bog Brothers, they show their love for them by giving them a ride to the big party, by inviting them to their house for dinner, by not laughing when they show up in tattered tuxedos for some reason, all looking like some sort of three-card Monty player, looking like they raided Raffish Ralph's wardrobe, bearing a pot of stew. We don't know, but we do know that they show their... they invite them over for dinner, I guess. Did they ever invite the Panda family over for dinner? They know they threw them a party. Did they ever talk to them? We don't know. We don't know. Get Out and Do It. So this is one of my favorite sections in these books, because Get Out and Do It is activities to do. It ranges what they ask you to do. It goes anywhere from like write your name on a cup to start a nonprofit dedicated to eradicating hunger in your community. Like it's a spectrum of ability. So I'm curious as to what they're going to ask me to do. Get out and do it. One, design a fun car with no top. All right, here goes. I guess we're taking this. I'm kidding. It's a hilarious joke. For those of you listening and not watching along, I hilariously misinterpreted draw a fun car with no top to mean design a fun car while wearing a no top. And so I mimed into the camera that I was going to remove my shirt. And then I mimed that I suddenly realized that I had misinterpreted the instruction and I sat back down. It was a delightful bit of physical comedy, a delightful misdirect on my part, a spooky moment for people watching, thinking, oh no, am I going to have to see this man with his shirt off? That would be terrifying, terrible, and blinding. So no, but it was a funny joke. A little bit of comedy, a little lighthearted humor that I'm sorry you missed. If you're not watching this on YouTube, I'm sorry you missed it at home. And picture it yourself. Imagine me with no shirt on. And now that you're done screaming, we can move on to... Oh, and I'm not going to design a car. I don't have time. Design a car? Who do I look like? Grizz Royce? Grizzly Royce? I'm no car designer. And I assume that they wanted us to do that because, like, all the bears have cars with no top. I guess that's what they... I guess, bear country, they're all ragged. They all got their rag tops down so their hairs can blow. With your family, help a neighbor with a job like yard work. Well, that's a good thing you can do. Go out and be neighborly. Is that something you can accomplish? We don't have much yard work to do here right now. It's the middle of February. The end of February. February? Is it the end of February? Yes, it's the end of February. Today's the last day of February. By the time you hear this, it'll be the beginning of March. Today's the last day of February. I guess it's March, though. There's not a whole lot of yard work to help out with. We haven't been getting much snow either, but usually what happens is... In Minnesota, it's really big to, like, if you're shoveling your walk, you shovel a little bit beyond your walk, just as a way of saying, like, I got you, neighbor. Like, I've shoveled a few feet into your area, so that if everyone does that, shovel a few feet into the other person's area, you're doing basically the same amount of work, actually. And, like, the last person on the row will do far less work. So, I don't know. Is that neighborly? I guess. If you have a snow blower, you're supposed to blow everyone's snow. Like, that's just neighborly. I don't have one, so... Be neighborly if you're listening to this. But yeah, help people out. Like, that's neighborly. That's a neighborly thing to do. Help with a job like yard work or whatever. That's doable. Three. Write three things you can do to help at home. When your girlfriend tells you to clear off the stove, clear off all the stove. Don't leave your kitchen towel up there. And don't leave... anything else up there. Clean the whole thing off. That's one thing you can do to help at home. I can also do my dishes. That's what I do at home. I help at home. I am a lovable chap. And that's the biggest thing I can do to help at home. It's maintain my lovability. So I got you covered, everyone. What can you do to help at home? Interesting to help at home. It's not about being neighborly. It's just about doing your chores. So I don't know. But the bears do help around the house, each other. Is there any other question? No. I do want to share something, though. I had a Bog Brothers-esque, well, that's a rude thing to say. I had a Bog Brothers-esque interaction, though, about 27 years ago at this point. When I first moved up here, I worked at a restaurant on Lake Street called Nora's on Lake Street. And we had a much older clientele. We were a pretty nice-ish restaurant. It wasn't anything super fancy, but it was nice-ish home cooking type food. And there was this one family who used to come in. They came in about once a month. And they drove up in what I can only describe as a Munster's car or a Beverly Hillbillies car, like a literal Beverly Hillbillies car. Like, they drove through Petticoat Junction to get here. What's that out the window? Nothing, because there's no top, but also some sort of Green Acres farm out the side. I'm making Hooterville references. All the Hooterville shows, which were canceled in the 1970s purge of rustic rural shows as they tried to go more into the All in the Family type hard-hitting issue shows. Even though the Hooterville shows were all doing great in the ratings, they didn't want to be associated with them anymore. I'm making Hooterville references. I'm out of Hooterville references. I'm trying not to bash rural communities. Like, why would I do that? That would be ugly. But the Bog Brothers are set up as this book does other the Bog Brothers, and so this family would pull up in their Munsters-esque car. If you saw it, you would say it's the Munsters car. They would be piled in it, like in the back. Like, the people in the rear would be sitting higher than the people in the front. It was an old-timey car. It was obviously very eye-catching. They pull up. They come in. They didn't have, like, the nicest clothes, which was fine because no one in their restaurant had the nicest clothes. But they seemed a little lower income than other people. And which is whatever. They were in our restaurant. They're customers. But I didn't wait on them. They were never in my section until I'd been there a few months. And they come in and they sit down at one of the booths. There'd be about five or six of them. And like mother, father, and a bunch of kids. And maybe sometimes like an older like relative with them. And they're in my section. And one of the servers who'd been there a long time comes up to me as I'm heading out. And she goes, don't bother paying too much attention to them. And I was like, well, what do you mean? She's like, they never tip. They're terrible tippers. They're not gonna leave you a tip, so don't go out of your way for them. And it was interesting because I was like, well, I'm a server, it's my job, and I serve regardless of how nice you seem. I give everyone kind of the same equal treatment. You've never been waited on by me. I haven't worked at a restaurant since I worked at Nora's, but were I to, you would be blinded by the light, how amazing I was as a server. I'm a good server. I love customer service. I like talking to people. I'm not good in social situations, but I'm good in customer service situations. I like helping people out. I like making people happy. I'm a good server. So I'm not going to ignore these people. Like, they're my customers. I'm gonna serve them with a smile and go out of my way to do what I can for them. They came into a restaurant to have an enjoyable lunch, and I'm going to give them an enjoyable lunch. So I greet them as I welcome to Nora's. What can I get for you? They put in their order. I give them as much attention as I can. We share a few laughs back and forth. They joke around with me. They seem to be in a good mood. They leave, and they leave me a good size tip. And I was like, okay, well, they left me a tip. I guess they just never leave anyone else a tip. I wonder what, probably because everyone treats them like human garbage. Probably because everyone treats them like garbage. Of course they don't leave a tip. You treat them like trash. They're going to leave you trash. You approach them as if they're undesirable. They're going to be undesirable. Like, they're like, fine, you don't want to talk to me? I don't feel any need to, like, be nice to you. I just treated them like I treated everybody else. And I think that's kind of the lesson. Like, the Bog Brothers look different. They come across as lower income. They drive a crazy car that makes a lot of noise. They may not be the cleanest people on the block, but they have good hearts. They have good hearts. They just have a different way of living. They have different, priorities in their life, different values, and that's fine. That's what part of being a community is. Everyone has different values. Everyone has different priorities. People approach the world in different ways. But as the Berenstains and Mike Berenstain and the Berenstain books, the what are they called? The gifts of the spirit books, especially, go out of their way to point out. Neighborliness and kindness and community are not passive things to be. They are active things to be. If you want to be a good neighbor, you got to go out. You got to be a good neighbor. Like you got to walk the talk. You got to put your words into action. You can't just be like, well, you know, they're dirty, so I'm never going to talk to them. Maybe they don't have time to clean the yard. Maybe they don't want to clean the yard because they have other things they need to do. They're cooking. They're slopping their hog. Maybe they don't know how to fix their roof. Maybe they need someone to help them out because they don't have a whole lot of money. Papa, you are a carpenter. Maybe you can go over there and being like, you want me to patch up this roof? Like, I'm good at this. I'm really good with my hands. Maybe they gave you a free, you know, repair at their uncle's fix-it shop. You can do a good turn now for them. Maybe this isn't about trading off favors. Maybe it's just about being friends and being like, yeah, I'll fix your roof. Like, I've got an extra afternoon. You know, what am I going to do? Clean my windows again? Like, maybe that's the lesson of this book. But as always in the Berenstain Bear world, love is active. Love is action, and community is action, and neighborliness is action. And not judging people too harshly for things you don't understand is active. It's active. Like, it's not a matter of just not judging them. It's a matter of going out of your way to include them in the community. So yeah, and maybe you find out they are bad people. Maybe they are terrible people. Who knows? But you don't know that until you talk to them and get to know them. So yeah, that's the Berenstain Bears. Love their neighbors. It's available as an ebook. It's available in paperback. I own it in both forms. And also, did you notice one thing? What did you notice about this book? A little quiz. What didn't happen at all in this book? Anything? 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 Yeah, there's no religion in this book. Not once, except for in the opening quote, which is from Luke, did anything religious get mentioned. It's a Living Lights book that is basically just about values. It's just a value book. Value your neighbors. Love your neighbors. You can skip that page. You would never know this was not even in the go out and do it section. There's nothing religious in this book. Design a car is about as religious as it gets. Design a car with your top off is about as religious as it gets. Because it's like that story in the Exodus where Moses... They find Moses, and they're like, what you doing, Mo? And he's all, I was getting hot, so I took off my shirt. Check this out. Designed a chariot with no cover on it. Designed this pretty rad chariot. And they're like, that's weird. That's a weird thing to do. We're worshiping this golden calf. And then he, like, smites them down or whatever happens. Like, people who worship the golden... Nothing good comes to Moses' friends and family who are worshiping that golden calf. He comes down, and then they learn their lesson. Don't worship a golden calf, but design a car without your shirt on. And it's good, I guess. That's the lesson we learned here. And the Berenstain Bears love their neighbors. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for being a part of this bold experiment. Thank you so much as I enter into my 10th. Like, this has been my, as of like May, I think, April, I will have been doing this for 10 years. So thank you so much. We got so many episodes. If you just found me on YouTube, check out my pod. Most of my show isn't on YouTube because it's all audio mostly. So go check it out on podcast stuff. Would you like me to cover some older books? I know that a few of you have said yes. Would you like me to cover some older books? Would you like me to do some reaction videos to the old TV show? Let me know. I did one last time. Some people liked it. Didn't get a whole lot of interaction. So check that out. Check me out on YouTube. Check me out on your podcasts, wherever you do it. I'm just sitting here. I do this all by myself. It's fun. Sometimes I have guests. Do you want me to have more guests? Let me know if you want me to have more guests. Thank you so much. You're all awesome. And I'll see you all next time, deep in bear country. I don't know why I stuck out my tongue. I hate when people stick out their tongues. It's my least favorite thing in the world. I hate when people stick out their tongues. I don't find it funny. I don't find it.